Channel One Right, August 11, 1969. Channel One Right, August 11, 1969. Channel One Right, August 11, 1969.
The 11th of August, 1969. They've been closed for a week and be closed for another month. They're going to be closed a long time. Ruth said they had so much stuff to clean up, so they haven't been seeing people. And this morning I went in for water, and Roberts came on over to unlock the door, and it was already unlocked. And oh, we just got to talking in general, and he got off on this one beautiful subject. Now, the awful thing was, I didn't have my good microphone plugged in. But the little Sony, the Sony 50, has a microphone built in, and it picked it up. It picked it up, and I could hear, I can hear it, most of it, enough to copy it. But I mean, type it out, but I can't copy it on the other tape. It won't come through clearly enough on the other tape. So I didn't copy this long, nice, fine report on taking care, doing the first aid on the motor yourself, or having it done like he does up at Birch. I just couldn't copy all that, but I did copy down what he said about Louise Graham, and I could get most of the words of that, one or two sentences I couldn't get when he's talking low. Well, I realized what happened before we finished talking, and I shivered and tried to go on as if nothing happened. Then I got my water, you see, my drinking water that I get in those half-gallon plastic jugs that the milk came in. I simply couldn't go off. Ruth was over puttering on the porch, and I went over to make a comment on that great stack of sheet music, old in her family, back in the 1890s, and maybe earlier, that she left over to house last week. I just had to comment on that, and then we got to talking. Roberts was just inside, so eventually I got back on Louise Graham. And the tape is audible, but it's not a finished tape like that first one on doing first aid on one's own car.
Well, that seemed to be right remarkable stack of music.
What's that,
guy? That they found in the kitchen there. See, that seemed to be a right remarkable stack of music.
Oh, gosh. I don't know if they can do anything with it or not, but I can't do anything with it, and I don't want it.
Oh, some of that stuff we just noticed in the copyright date.
They're old.
Way back. Now, where is that?
It was printed in Germany, guy. It was my mother's.
Yeah.
See, mother studied under a man by the name of Kegreis, he didn't live long enough to become extremely famous, but he was a very brilliant young man, and he was the first American to compose and play a complete concert before the Kaiser Wilhelm.
Mm.
And he was the one who taught mother this music, and then mother went on and taught music herself.
So some of this music
goes back to 1890 something.
Comes through him.
Yes. In other words, he bought the music for her.
Yeah.
Is what he did. That old stuff.
And
then I imagine the other music is in this country. Perhaps she bought herself. You know, it was printed in New York and Boston and places like that. But all goes back to the 1890s.
And what was his name?
Kegreis.
Kegreis?
Mm-hmm. I got a book upstairs that I found
after.
R-E-I-Z, I think. Wait a minute, let me go look, guys.
R-E-I-Z.
They might be able to locate his name because of what he did, that one thing he did. Let me go see. I don't know. I think I've got a book upstairs. She says, from Mrs. O.B. Kegreis, Christmas 1896. He lived with his sister.
Yeah.
I don't know whether he was married. I don't think he was ever married. But he's Kegreise. Now, whether his initials were O.B. or not, I couldn't tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I find in any of mother's other effects anything, they can have this too. I don't want it. I found this after the other stuff went.
Mm-hmm.
See, I don't know what this is, but it had insect pattern, so it's a didn't do any good. The termites got in it just the same.
Yeah.
Let me get something and dust it out. But this is what comes of not taking care of my stuff. Well, I didn't even know where this was. And there's still some more books somewhere, but I haven't found them yet.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know the prisoners country. I think I showed them to say ones, and then I wrapped them up and put them back up there somewhere, and they're underneath something I haven't begun to get through up there, but I'm not going to maybe this year either. Well, I mean that. There's so much to do. I've had to clean up such a mess. When you don't touch anything for 2 or 3 years, well, this is what happens.
Yeah.
But that's his name. Now, I don't know about those initials, guys.
Yeah.
Mrs. O.B., I don't know who she was.
Yeah.
I don't know what his initials were, but that's
you
his
know,
name.
Guy didn't know that I was a Polish, did he? Huh? I didn't know that Guy was a Polish. I wish you'd tell me what name you write over there, or over, or whatever it is. Shoot.
He's looking at you like...
Well, you mean, I was a great admirer of Eddie Gist, so anything that I say would be something like Eddie Gist, you see.
Yeah.
Let me stay by the side of the road where the mini skirts go by, the ones that are short, the ones that are wide, and the ones that are nice and high.
Yeah.
Don't make me sit in a mourner seat or take a cynic stand, but let me strain my eyes if I must and see as much as I can.
Let me tell you, Robert, I was out in the country not long ago, a new preacher, a new Methodist preacher, he and his wife, and he's got a miniskirt daughter. They came in and sat over on the side there and kept their seat. I didn't notice anything for some time, and I looked over there, and there that little girl was. She looked to be about the middle teens, and she seemed like her miniskirt got more and more mini. And she sat there, and she kept her eyes down all the time. She never did look up. Those miniskirts don't fit the personality all the time.
You know that
really
thing
funny.
Up here, Guy, I'm saving that piece out of the paperwork.
Ruth, I can't hear. I'm hard of hearing. Turn that down. Half a notch.
I'll
turn it off.
No, don't turn it off.
Turn it off.
I don't know why I get it so hard of hearing.
I turned it on, Guy, to see if I could hear who that guy's name was that committed suicide.
Well, leave it up there where you can.
No, turn it off. You know this gang from the university, these three crackpots and all these hippies come down here to this thing of Hollis Holbrook's, and they started this love and togetherness and accomplishment.
Yeah.
So I have a friend over at Crescent Beach. So they're going to have these seances here, and they do. And then there's 1 week or 2 weekends they're going to go to Cedar Keys, and a couple of weekends they're going over to Crescent Beach.
Mm-hmm.
So now in the paper, this Playboy magazine says that they... after school occupation or pleasures of the students is to go to Sin City, and if they and what they don't do at Sin City, then they go to Crescent Beach. So I have a friend over there, and he's kind of hard-boiled and dry, witty thing, and so I spoke to him about this love and togetherness and accomplishments, you know, at Crescent Beach. He said, I don't know why in the hell you'd send them over here. He said, we don't want them over here. He said, take them back to Micanopy where that belongs. He said, get them the hell out of here. We don't want them.
Well, now, look here, Ruth. You see, I exclude that from my mind. I don't think about the center over here or Crescent Beach or the other people. But now, you see, you can't do that. Because, you see, Robert...
He brings it right up, doesn't he?
Yeah. But what we just been talking about something out there I was interested in. And you see, he takes it all in. And I think if you're going to know about things, you can't just exclude them and cut them out the way I do. I see, I was interested in one of your neighbors over here,
Louise Graham.
But I didn't know anything about her. Mm-hmm. What I knew about her was what I saw in Sunday school. Let me tell you something. He didn't, they're not the same type, but he still knew a great deal about her and could do business with her. Let me tell you, I asked you to put me on the track of a good old cracker, and you said you didn't know it anymore, that something happened to him. Now you see, that's one right there.
Louise Graham?
Yes, sir. Now there it is, right there.
Well, guys, she's not, she isn't, not as we mean. A cracker. Now, Marcia, Ken, and Rollins didn't have some.
Yeah, well, look, Kitty, I told Guy that...
She's a cracker family now.
Well, she likes to pretend that she's a real Southerner, and she represents the South, and the damn Yankee is no good. I mean, that's the whole story. That's what I'm trying to put across. Now, as far as the cracker's concerned, Guy, a real honest-to-goodness cracker, that isn't the case.
No, but still, she got those old cracker, I think.
She has. But, I mean, as far as an old cracker is concerned, an old cracker, if he found out, I don't care where you came from, if he found out that you were reliable,
and
you're compatible and honest.
Well, now you just idealized the cracker. They're also scoundrels.
Oh, a lot of them.
This fellow Scruggs up here is a cracker.
What do you mean? Carmichael?
And he deals with crackers. I can't see it.
J.R. Robertson, Papa John's Fish Camp, second camp off of Highway U.S. 441, Orange Lake, Florida. Turn right at first camp, one block to our landing. J.R. Robertson, owner, ask for Papa John or Doc Ross.
Yeah.
Over.
Oh, that's one of your old cars.
Yes.
Wait a minute.
One of his.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Four-room cabin, three double beds, kitchen lights, $2 per day and night. Two-room cabin, two double beds, kitchen lights, $150 per night, per day and night. Weekly rates. Cabins must be booked in advance. Boats 50 cents a day. Motors 150 to 250 per day. All in good condition. Pole furnished free with boats. Bait and seek fishing all year round. Free cooking places with lights. Good service night and day. Guides on application. Store at camp. Party boat for weekends. Four beds, radio lights, gas stove and conveniences.
$15. For the weekend.
For the weekend.
All outside conveniences.
You're down to
two head up and one low one.
We were there.
That's our man, Margaret Kenner Rollins.
That's
our
Margaret Kenner Rollins.
We're
right there.
Right
when she made a landing for the boat dock and made it, which we didn't think she was going to do.
But Margaret Kenner Rollins got a Hutto. You read in Margaret Kenner Rollins' book, Hutto. Oh, Hutto couldn't make change for a dollar. He'd say, here's a cash register, here's a cash box, you make your change.
That's
he
right.
didn't know a change for a quarter, even.
And the store looked about like it was smaller than Woods, but it was that tight.
But if old Papa John now, if Papa John didn't know you.
Know who you were.
He'd trade with you, but he wouldn't have anything to say to you. And you could drown out there in the lake as far as he's concerned. He wouldn't lift a hand to help you. But if he knew you, he knew.
All right. Now let me tell you.
You want that? You can have it.
Yeah.
I've got another one.
You have got another one?
Oh, you better keep that.
I'm sure I've got another one.
I don't know if you got that other one or not. Somebody, I think, snitched it.
Well, I'll keep it till I find out. If I have, I can have it. Because
yes.
I think you'd like
to
enjoy having one, wouldn't you?
Yes.
Well,
yes,
if I have another one, you can have this
one. Let me tell you, I'm not good at filing. I love file, but I'm not good at filing. You know, I can't keep up with them. I put them in folders. Then I lose which folder. Which folder. Look, Robert, now you turn it to the other. You see, now, Papa John, that's... times have gone past him,
okay.
And she survived over in the times of the inhospitable crackers. Now, you look at the transfer. Now, this business about, you know, opposing anything and making up with raised taxes, isn't that what part of it?
She opposed anything. Schools, segregation, desegregation.
She was one of the biggest battlers when they took the school away from here.
She a battle guy, like I said over there. She has some good ideas. She has some ideas that aren't worth a damn. They're detrimental. Some of them are progressive, some of them are good. And like I say, everybody has ideas, good and bad. But to me, I have always been a little bit leery of doing anything with Mrs. Graham, very much so, because I'm afraid
of her. Let's be frank.
Huh?
I said, don't trust her,
Oh, no, I don't trust her. I wouldn't trust her as far as I can see.
But she wanted the school to stay in.
Yeah.
But segregated.
Right.
And put up another school.
Well, in fact, the matter is, Guy, she didn't see, she didn't see a damn thing wrong with that school out there. Well, if she went up on the second floor.
Well, you can shake that thing by the time. It's positively not safe, in my opinion.
Now, that's a pretty large undertaking.
Well, Guy, it was started out to save on income tax, on capital gains.
See, she sold that Stuckey property.
She stole the place where she got all the money.
That's what gave her the start. They used to live there where
the Shell place is.
They used to live there across the road from Stucky.
It was only done.
Quite grand.
They didn't have
anything. They had land, yes, but that was all.
A little land. A
few cattle.
Yes.
Well, yeah.
They were rough tough bunch too, don't you?
Now this compound thing has just
Ernie
Dunn, guys, he built one house there. She sold a house. And if you don't take that money within 1 year and replace it into another house, you have to pay the government a big pile of it, see,
yeah,
to get away from that.
Yeah.
Now, of course, she thinks she's smart, but you're only prolonging your agony. She prolonged the agony by taking, she's not paying the capital gains this year or last year, whenever she built the house, see?
Yeah.
So then she sells another piece of property. So then she goes to work and takes that money and invests that into a house. She hadn't got caught, but that's illegal. But she got away with it so far. And she had another little house there, whether she moved it on there or not, to get some more away from more income tax, capital gains tax, see? That's what she did it for. Now, there was a woman there running a little nursing home. Like, she'd take care of two individuals. And she did a very good job, I understand. Out there in Grahamville or whatever that devil she called it.
Uh-huh.
So I think she had three, or she built one house for Andy, the son.
Yeah.
Because, of course, the father died and Andy would be an heir. He would be, he should inherit some of that money that came from Stuckey's and those things there. So that Mrs. Graham, the Graham property, has brought in, there was a good concrete block house that the daughter had built, Graham's daughter, who got divorced. Before she was divorced, she and her husband built a good concrete block house, a big one, out there where that towel place that Sinclair's gas station sits now. So you see, she sold a piece where the Standard station is, where the Sinclair station is, where the Phillips 66 station is, where Stuckey's is, and where the Shell station is. She sold all of that land. She still may have some left. And she got a hell of a price for it.
She got $38,000 for one piece there.
1 acre.
So she's got some money. Or has had some money. She's still
so
got
you
it.
See, she had to do something. She had to do something with that money. Or the government would take half of it. And she wasn't about to give the United States government half of it if she could get away with it. And they take at least a quarter of it. So she goes out there and she reinvests a certain portion of it, or as much as she could, in a like property. Now, the house, that the big concrete block house that was there where the Sinclair station is, they let it go down and down and down, and then they moved it back up north, up toward the fence up there. There's a concrete block house. If you look back in the field north, along I-75, on the west side, you'll see a concrete block house. They moved that thing up there. What they're doing, whether they're still going to pot or not, I don't know. But she would claim depreciation on that thing, see, for the government, and claim a hellacious pile of depreciation. And she's true.
Who would she have to help her on those things?
Well, somebody like you just, didn't you say Scrubs and Carmichael or something
like that?
Yeah. Maybe old Park Carmichael.
Tax people.
Park Carmichael, he's a clever cracker. Can hardly talk English, but in fact, I can't understand the bastard. But
yeah,
he's a lawyer.
Yeah. Well, now she does a lot.
On these,
she has causes. This old South business and the genealogy of the priestess. Now, how does that fit in, Robert?
Well, maybe she's a relative of the feaster. Maybe she is a feaster.
She is a feaster.
Well, the feasters are all got their family living out there, you know, too. There's
like
another kind of community
there
in itself.
That's another clan.
That's beyond.
That's
a
clan, yeah.
It's a clan.
Yeah.
Some of the feasters have, one of the feasters, one of them is, but a couple of them have good education.
Well, one of the school teachers, he lives out there.
Yeah.
Lynn.
Yeah.
I don't
His
know.
Wife's a real nice gal. She works
a lot
in the
nice
library. Yes,
there
are
some
nice
real nice
out
people out there.
Mrs. Feaster is an all right woman.
Uh-huh.
I don't know her husband, but he's
Well, what is there about? I had the impression of her as a right outgoing person, you know, with tell a good story. Now you haven't seen her that light.
She might tell you a good story, all right, but don't put any money on it.
Talk about cattle and things like that.
They've had a bunch of scrub cattle from time to time, guy. They've never had any, what I would call them.
I've never known them to have any real top stock out there.
Decent cows. And like I told you, her husband was from hand to mouth.
The son drove a lumber truck for years, killed an 8-foot rattler back here on this county road.
He does anything, kid. He drives a lumber truck. He'll take a drag line or anything. But Hoyt Graham, Hoyt was just a timber man, that's all.
I really didn't know him. I knew of him. I knew her.
Hoyt Graham.
Wait a minute now. Is Andy the one who cleared Freddie Wood's piece up there? When he came by my house and he said I'd put up silage. And way back. Yes. And I remember Freddie said he quit one time for 2 or 3 weeks because he had to go hunting down the scrub.
Yeah, that's the way he does. Hunting time comes, he just picks up and goes.
He goes out bear hunting too. Takes a youngster with him and they go up. If they hear of a bear anywhere, well, they'll go hunt the bear, poor bear.
And go try his chance.
That's Andrew. I forget now. Hoyt Graham got mad at me one time about something, but I can't remember now what. When somebody told me he was mad at me, I told him, I said, oh, it make a damn difference to me how mad he got at me. What's that?
Well,
you remember what Hoyt Graham got mad at me about?
No, boy, I sure don't. It's been too long ago.
He'll remember. He'll come back to
him.
Who's
dead?
Hoyt Graham dead. Yeah, I know. Well, now, you see, he lived long enough to get a glimpse of this money. I think. Right on the eve of it.
Right on the eve of it.
He did.
And now, you see, Louise has lived to get a hold of it. And, you see, they never...
And she'll watch that damn election board there, along with Mrs. Whitehurst and some of the others. She'll watch that damn election board there, just like an eagle. So that if push comes to shove, she could use some political influence to try and know who's who and what's what as far as the Democrats or the Republicans or the Independents are. If she knows a majority of them, she could probably go around and get them to sign a petition, or she could tell some of the politicians that she knows certain people. She knows this and knows that.
What does she want?
Well, anything that she might want.
What would she want?
She might want that road paved out there. There are a million and one things that she can think of that she might want. In fact, the matter when it came time for this school business here, she raised so much hell that for a while some people didn't even know whether it would go through or not. But the powers that be up in Gainesville overrode her, as far as she was concerned. That road there, you know where it ends, the paved road ends there at Grahamville, and then it's not paved on out. She's going to have that paved because she owns a little piece of property out there. She's going to make them pave it. So she raised so much hell that they said, hell no, we won't pave it. They widened it to 100 feet wide, I think, but they didn't pave it. They're not going to pave it.
But what does she do when she raises hell
out of it? She gets up. She gets up and storms and carries on and talks. Talks about who she knows and all the property she owns and all the taxes she pays and all of her family pays and all her ancestors paid and everything else.
Whereabouts? Where'd she do that?
Where? Well, she'd do it up in Gainesville. She'd do it anywhere.
Just go up.
County commission meetings or the road board meetings, or if she thinks it's something important, heck, she'd allow her to take off and go to Tallahassee.
Is that right?
She can't tell what she'd allow them to.
Is that right?
Some of these politicians were afraid of her, but I'm afraid of her. I stay away from her. I keep away from her. I speak to her. Good morning. Good evening. That's all the end of it. I ain't gonna talk to her.
But you still, you can't exclude her from your...
Guy, I think that and all through my life, I think Ruth has backed me up in this, that all through my life I have tried to keep an interest in all segments of the population, whether I like them or I dislike them. I guess it was because of my early training and early childhood that I have. Now, there are a lot of people who condemn gangsters. All gangsters are horrible.
Yeah.
Gangsters are this, gangsters are that. Al Capone was this, or Dutch Schultz was this, or
they don't want
Frank Buell was this. Yeah, they don't have anything to do. But Frank Buell was one of our best friends.
And he was a gangster, too.
Yeah.
Damn right he was a gangster.
He was in, he couldn't get out. Once they're in, they can't get out, guys.
But he was one of the best friends I ever had.
Once they're in it, they're there for life.
He had very few friends.
The only way to get out.
I have another one by the name of Tommy Sparks.
Yeah.
The reason his name was Tommy is because he could use a Tommy gun so damn good. Tommy could use a Tommy gun. And Tommy rode the Rattlers. He asked me to send him $20. I sent him $20. I'd send him $20. She didn't believe there was a town called Kalamazoo, because everybody said, oh, you have to go to Kalamazoo instead of going to hell, go to Kalamazoo. Or I'm going to leave here and go to Kalamazoo, because she didn't believe there was a town by the name of Kalamazoo. But Tommy once sent for $20 from Kalamazoo. His being in Bellingham or Portland, Washington, or out there in Klamath Falls, Oregon, or California, and he'd want to come back. He'd only work 3 or 4 months. He said, boss, look, if you got any work for me to do, pile it on this week, because I'm leaving here. Friday night's my last night.
Well, what the hell do you want to leave here for now, Tommy? I got itchy feet, I'm going. Just pile it on. He was a marvelous.
Marvelous.
Upholster guy. He could turn out
work
perfect.
And,
oh, gee,
half
I almost
said
half the time
as
an average upholster.
But, and he could get a job anywhere. But Tommy would do anything for me. Anything.
Robert, are you...
I didn't have to ask him either.
Yeah.
And you talk about underground, telegraph, and... I'll tell you something else. So they talk about the Tong War. Do you know that the Tong have a better telegraph system and a better telephone system in the United States without using telephone? Or how in the hell they do it, I don't know. But they have a better system of communication than the FBI has. Don't they?
They sure did. I guess it's so little.
I'll tell you what. One of the Tongs was in my shop 20 minutes after a bullet came through the wall, and he had better than 14 miles to go in heavy traffic. He said, China boy cut himself. I said, China boy cut himself. I said, hell, a lot of blood for China boy cut himself. I said, look, the police are going to be around here in a few minutes. He says, police? I said, yeah, police. All right. I said, all right. I got out of there. Police were there in 5 minutes. They couldn't find anything. They didn't find anything. 15 minutes later, the Sands brother came walking in there. He says, "Dad, my brother have an accident?" I said, "Did your brother have an accident?" I said, "Yeah, your brother had an accident." He said, "I'm sorry, Mr. Smith." I said, "Yeah, I'm sorry too." I said, "But didn't do any harm." I said, "The bullet just put a hole through the wall there." I said, "That's all."
Yeah, lucky it didn't hit that. Yeah, it's just working, guy.
And you wouldn't
believe she'd have a cup.
No, sir.
She wore her hair part in the middle, old fashioned way, pulled down tight, a little bitty knot back here, and she was around 50 something. Wore glasses. She just looked like a first grade little
old swear better than a
sheep. She was that bowl over her head. She was out that door and cussing Sam out before anybody got near anything.
Poor Sam. He didn't know.
Oh, Zeus. I tell you guys, the 20s were the roaring 20s in our area. I don't know if they were everywhere, but they sure were everywhere.
Can Louise cuss?
Well, I imagine she can, right well. I don't think he could see her too well. If it's Kurt Moger that way.
Oh, no, I'll ask somebody that knows better than I do.
Who'd know?
I sort of have a notion she could, though.
She. Who'd know, Robert?
Cracker. Felton Heron. Felton, his nickname's Cracker.
Well, there's a Cracker.
Would he know about Louis Green?
Would he know her?
Yeah, sure he'd know her.
Sure.
Felton might not talk.
Felton might not say much.
Felton's not a talker.
He'd talk to you.
Yeah, what did he say to me? I couldn't
receive. Does he light out sometimes and talk to you?
Who, Hilton? Hilton,
not much.
No, he don't talk much. If
Hilton's
we
very close now.
If he and I agree on something, I know that he agrees with me.
Yes.
If he likes somebody and I don't, he might say, oh, Smitty, you're wrong, but that's your opinion. You just don't know him, that's all. But everybody has their likes and dislikes, and that's helping leave it go a lot.
Yeah.
But ordinarily, I know if he don't like somebody, why, and I don't like him, we'll swap different things. But
well, now, he took that old refrigerator, Miss Boyle's over there, and what did it count?
Mm-hmm.
Did he like her?
To Mr. Boyle?
Miss Boyle?
They got along all right together, and Hilton felt sorry for her. He did. He felt sorry for Mr. Boyle. You mean he took it over there and put it in the house?
No, it was over there at his place. That's where I got it.
Yeah.
It was over there when I first saw it.
Oh. And he had repaired it or done something to it?
I don't think he done anything to it. He's just going to move it for her. Sell it for her.
Mm-hmm. Down to.
So I got old buddy Sawyer pick it up. We call it over there.
No.
Well, I didn't know you had got that much mileage with a little trouble on that truck, Robert.
70,000.
And you use SPP?
That was all right. I had one in it, but I put two more in it, just for good luck.
And you use the same kind of oil?
If I would change that oil now, Guy, I would try to keep, or I add a quart. Now, yesterday, I added a quart of oil.
Yeah.
I told you that I ought to have a gasket put on there, and it leaks a little bit. But yesterday, I needed a quart of oil. So we went several miles out of our way to get the same oil that had been put on there.
Does, do funny service advice.
Who, Birch?
Birch?
Yeah.
Well.
He did. But now, I'll tell you another thing. Mr. Atkins, he can't keep it in time or put the points in or anything like that. Mr. Atkins does a good job of serving as far as service is concerned, oil and grease and whatnot, but then.
Now, that's what happened when the batteries ran out. And I tried to use weak batteries and get it down just for the information. That was Monday, the 11th of August, 69. Monday, the 11th of August, 69. This is Channel 1 right around 400. This is Channel 1 right around 400. Or 410, I guess it is. And now on Thursday, the 14th of August, I dropped by with Nick to see if Roberts was there and listen to him talk a little bit. Now, the kitchen door was open. And I heard them in there. They were just finishing up. They had drinking their coffee. Over where the big refrigerator or deep freeze box was, the floor was out. So they were really reworking things. And I got Roberts to tell Nick what he had told me on that poor tape the other day. Oh, that's good.
I just brought them home.
We sit down and eat while I go, Lucy. All eating.
Have a donut.
No,
who's who? Oh,
thank you.
Stay out there?
No, Nick's out there. I can't read your telephone.
Go ahead. I'll open you one over there. Wait a minute.
Hey, give this guy one of those things. Are you
Carter Robinson.
Yes, I got some more here.
Oh, did you? Did you find it?
I don't know. So there you are.
I can see
it. I thought you'd enjoy that.
I'll put that in my briefcase.
Well, I thought you'd enjoy that.
Robinson, let me get you a place in the coffee. Tell Nick what you told me about, don't you know, I said it paid a man to do first aid on his own car.
Right here.
That's fine information.
I was talking to several people, and one of them was Aiden Keeler, and bought the Ford.
Yeah.
I asked Aiden.
I'm going over anyhow, guys.
I'm going to go for a minute now.
I asked Aiden about oil and this 36. 300 miles or 6,000 miles before you change oil. And anyway, Aiden said that he had an engineer that ran an automobile over 110,000 miles without ever changing any oil.
Mm-hmm.
He had added a little bit of oil, but he would always change the filter because oil never wears out.
Mm-hmm.
Oil gets dirty, but it doesn't wear out, so he would add oil. So I personally, this minute I got the car, after I had the car, they tell you to leave that break-in oil in there for 2,000 miles. So I took it out at 1,000 and put the best oil I could buy in it.
Oh, yeah.
And then I put STP in it. So after I had it that way for a while, I, instead of adding one can of STP, I put two cans of STP. And right now, out there right now, it's got three cans of STP in it. And I've driven that thing for 70,000 miles. The only thing I've done to the motor is I have it greased regularly. I have changed the oil quite often, but I watch that darn filter, and I watch the filter, the gasoline filter. I have that changed about every 15,000 miles.
So you don't check the gasoline filter?
I change, that's to keep the darn carburetor clean.
Sure.
I have had to have that carburetor and that thing cleaned out and rebuilt twice.
Yeah.
So,
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that's the reason why I keep changing the darn filters.
Yeah.
Because this lead or whatever it is they put in the darn thing on this high test gas seems to gum up that carburetor. That carburetor on a Ford. Ford has the lousiest carburetor I think that they make. It's a Carter carburetor, and it's not worth a hoot. You can't adjust it. If you get a Stromberg or a Zenith or some other good make, you'd be able to adjust it, but you can't adjust that thing. So, but anyway, getting back to the oil, I haven't had any motor trouble other than the distributor putting the points in a couple of times. And once, it sounded like I had a valve lifter stuck. So I was in the Ford place. I can show you what I was in there for, was to pay, make my last payment on it. I'd driven it for 36 months, and I was paying my last payment. So I asked this fellow, the foreman there, or service manager, whatever you call him. I asked him, I said, "What's that noise?" He said, "That's a valve lifter." I said, "Well, how much do they cost?" He said, "Well, it doesn't matter how much they cost." He said, "They cost $3.50 about."
This is rich.
But he said, "We found," he said, "that when you have one go bad," he said, "all 16 go bad." So he said, "You might as well put all 16 in." I said, "16 of them," I said, "at $3.50 a piece," I said, "it'd be around $72. Well, he said, "That's not the only expense." He said, "You'd have gaskets and some other incidentals," and he said, "the labor." I said, "Well, hell, how much will the thing cost anyway?" He said, "Oh, around $140, $150. I said, "Well, I've got $140 right now." I said, "I'll just have to stand the noise." So on the way back, I stopped out here at Harrisburg. I said, "Damn noise in here driving me nuts." He said, "Yeah, it's driving me crazy too." He said, "Let's hear it again." So he listened to it, and he drove out. We got in the car. He drove it out the Rochelle Road 2 miles and back again. "That was a noisy damn thing." And then I said, "Yep." He wrote, "Look, bring it in tomorrow morning." He stopped and put the hood up and listened to it. He said, "Bring it in tomorrow morning." He said, "I don't think it's a lifter. I think it's something else." He said, if it's a lifter, he said it costs, the lifter costs $3.50. He said, it's going to take me all day to do it. And he said, it'll be $25 labor. And he said, you're going to have a couple of gaskets. And he said, I would say it would cost somewhere, and Bobby said, around $40. Okay. But he said, if it's not, if it's what I think it is, he said, it won't cost very much. We can fix the darn thing in 15 minutes. I said, boy, that's a broad statement, so bring it in the morning. So I took it up the next morning. He took the pan off the cover off the valve assembly, and he took the cam off of there, I mean the rocker arm assembly off, and he took the two end that sounded like the end one that was a valve lifter was giving me trouble. It was the one on the front end on the left hand bank. So he said he took them off and he switched them around. When he was doing it, I noticed the push rod, and I said, he also changed the push rods around. I said, that damn push rod isn't right. And he didn't pay attention to me, going ahead and put it together again. Listen, I started up. I turned the key on, and he started up. And he said, there's a trouble. This isn't a lifter. So he took it off and took the thing off again. And here the push rod was pointed instead of being round, you know, like that, and going up in that rocker arm, instead of going up into a socket, or a round socket, it had pyramided like that. And the doggone rocker arm had a pyramid point in there too, and it was going up and hitting, see, and going clack, clack, and it was making a hammer noise.
That's got to wait a minute. That's right, I can't hear.
Said, leave it here. I'll take you home. So he brought me down home. I said, well, while you're doing it, put two of them on there. Don't put just one in, put two in. Because that's what I intend to do, but all right. So he put two in. And when I got through with it, it sounded perfect. And I paid him, and my bill was $8.40.
Well, now, they're not mechanics anymore.
They're no mechanics. They're just parts changers. Gene was telling me last night, he has a warranty on that Plymouth of his. He got a new Plymouth. Well, it's 5 months old, I guess, or 6 months old. It's one of those fancy Plymouths. I wouldn't have one, but he's got it. So. It's got this cloth top. And what name is that on that Plymouth that Gene has? Do you know?
Oh,
that darn old plant, fancy pants one, anyhow. But he's had more darn trouble with it. And the latest thing was that the front end went bad, and the steering went bad, and they had to redo that.
Of course, it's going on.
I don't know the warranty. And, the front universal joint went bad. I mean, this is just recently. He's had trouble with it before. I can't think what all. Something went bad with it last night. So darn if they didn't charge him, they put, instead of putting new parts in, and new seals, you know, and the bearings and the front wheels, they don't put the new seals in, but they charge him for them just the same. And they charged him for the labor on the whole darn thing, and the labor was a hang of a lot more than the darn parts were.
They go by the book.
Yeah, they go by the book. So much for doing this job or doing that job. Shoot. When I worked for Packard, brother, we, as a motor technician, we got paid so much an hour and so much overtime. Well, when he worked for Peerless, I got a straight salary. When I worked for National Airlines, I got, well,
maybe like good money. I don't remember now, but over $100. It was not good money.
Oh, man, liar.
Well,
yeah.
$185
yeah,
I made at Packard.
Yes.
I made 200 and some odd at National Airlines every week.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I did major overhaul. I went to work, Guy, and came back, and she wouldn't believe that I'd ever gone to work. She swore that I hadn't gone to work. I could go to work with a white, didn't I? Go to work with a white shirt on, and good trousers, and good shoes, and I didn't get dirty. And I did major overhaul.
You had a grease jack.
No, ma'am. No, sir. I didn't have a grease jack either. But I had a cart 10 feet long, 3 feet wide, and 3 feet high. And all those parts were on white shelf paper. And the air was filtered so that there was no dust, there was no contamination whatsoever. And I had a rack there with the motor casting on there, bolted onto the stand, and all I had to do was put the darn thing together.
Yeah.
And I took it off of there, and I took clear oil, best oil you could buy, and I wiped that oil on there with my fingers. That way, you never touched anything with your hand unless you had oil on, because you might put some moisture on there, and that would cause rust. And everything like a magneto or things that are pistons or connecting rods or anything inside of the motor was magnaflux. If there was any cracks or any flaws in the darn thing, it was all right before we
should have stayed with that kind of work, guys.
Yes.
He should have done it when he was a boy. He never should have left it.
Yeah.
I
never heard of that.
Yeah. Well, I shouldn't have. What I should have done was go with Lycoming at Williamsport, experimental work. I had the offer and I had the job, and I had a fine salary offered to me, and I had my own laboratory. I didn't have to bother anybody except the vice president, and he would be my boss. Nobody else would have a word to say, and all I had to do was work in there in experimental lab for Lycoming at Williamsport, Pennsylvania.
Well, where did you...
Quit the darn thing, the whole work, because my mother, I was the only child left out of five, and my mother wanted me to keep on with the business. So I quit that. Went to furniture and interior decoration. But then during the war...
You just didn't know a good thing when you saw it, Robert.
Well,
that's the trouble.
Let my mother and my personal family feelings get the better of my good judgment, that's all.
Yeah.
I could have gone with Stu Bloxton with Stutz Motor Car, Stutz Bearcats. That time Stu wanted me to come out to Indianapolis work for him. And I can't think of the fellow's name. Up at Williamsport, he and two of them were arguing. I got mad at Culver, Vice President Packard. He was going to fire me, but I quit before he could fire me.
Yeah.
He didn't know anything, that guy. All he knew was he got the job to stocks and,
yeah.
and connection to the family.
Well, now, when you just tune up your motor, your point and all like that, you don't worry with it yourself.
Sometimes I do, but Forrest has a... Had the spokes there, and instead of years ago, we did it all by feeler gauges. In fact,
yeah.
I ran across an old brass feeler gauge that last night looking for a darn old pen holder for roots.
Yeah.
But then, I've had that darn feeler gauge since about 1916. It may have been brass then, I didn't make them out of steel. But Horace has this thing up there that he can tell exactly that. Dwell, what the points on the distributor
yeah.
are being.
Yeah.
And he can test the distributor, he can test the condenser, the coil, or anything like that.
You can.
And I don't have it here to do with.
Well, I've been going to Buster.
Well, Buster's a good shade tree mechanic. Now, let's put it that way. Buster's a good shade tree mechanic.
Yeah.
But he's a shade tree mechanic. He don't have any meters to go by. Buster goes by guessing by God. And he'll, Buster, to test a valve, Buster will take a screwdriver. And that's his main tool, a half-inch wrench and an open-end wrench and a screwdriver. And that's the way he'll do a valve job.
Yeah.
Yeah. I say Buster's a good shade tree mechanic. But that's what he is, a shade tree mechanic. He isn't. Horace has been head mechanic for various places.
Up in town?
Yeah. And he's also, during the war, he was an airplane mechanic. And he can work on these Well, he could work on light combing or smog.
Oh, really?
Right. Or he could work on a Franklin or some of these Continentals.
Shoot.
They used to give me, I wouldn't believe it. I used to put, you know, they used a little Continentals and a little putt-putts for trainers. I think some of them were breaking Stratton, I'm trying to think. I used to put four of those together in a day.
Robert, let me ask
one you. One time they had a straight six-cylinder motor come in there in Miami. It's made in Bloomfield, New Jersey. And the boss looked at it. He came over to me and he said, Bob, you know anything about a straight six? I said, yeah, straight six, but don't you bring any Lerone rotors in here to me. He said, no, it's a straight six. He said, well, it's a Red Owl calling service. Riddle was down Miami teaching primary training. I made a major overhaul on that six-cylinder straight inline airplane motor. Nobody in that shop knew what a straight inline motor was.
Ruth's got to get going.
She got to bribe me.
Let me tell you. Do you stand by what you said the other day about your neighbor over there?
Stand by what I said? I don't have anything to do with it, if that's what you mean. Which neighbor are you talking
that's
about?
That's one.
That one?
Yeah.
No, I don't have anything to do with it. I'll leave her alone, just so she leaves me alone.
Well, now, she's one of the outstanding citizens, Robert.
Well, she can stand out as far as she wants to. I've had a lot of sore thumbs standing out in my lifetime. And I've had to put a bandage around them from time to time. Shoot! So I have refused to work for the wealthiest people in this damn United States. I told Henry Ford to go to hell. I'll tell her to go to hell, too. You don't
well,
believe that.
Is
that's
it,
the truth.
Is it you just don't jive with her?
I don't jive with her philosophy or her ideals.
Well, now I'm not talking about the niggers.
No, I don't care anything about that either. I just don't want...
Well, the damn Yankees.
I get mad at the damn Yankees too, being a
yeah.
damn Yankee myself.
Yeah. Well, now here's the thing about it. I used to say that down here. I wished I could run across some nice Southern people down here. And you know the nicest Southern people I've found down here are the damn Yankees. Now there's absolutely no two ways about that, and I can name them. I can name them. You're one of them. And old Pappy Tyler, and I could. Just about
you
all.
You talk about somebody as an independent old guy, that Pappy Collar is.
Yeah.
But if Pappy can help you.
But he don't do anything in a public way the way she does.
Well, guy, let's face it. She don't do it in a public way unless she thinks she's going to get something back for it. Never have I ever known her to. Never.
But you don't give any keys.
No, because I stayed away from it and stayed away from her and stayed away from her implications in things purposely.
Well, I don't know anything she does that she gets anything out of.
No.
Oh, you know, the highway or something like that.
I don't know. I haven't kept track. Excuse me, I haven't kept track of her lately. I kept track of her for a long time.
What'd I do?
I found out that the best thing to do is let it alone. if you haven't had the mumps, you see a sign on the door that says mumps, you stay out.
There's something here that it hadn't come out yet. And none of my business, I'm just curious.
I don't know what you're all talking about.
I think it's a damn Yankee, actually. I'm really, huh? There's too many of them down here.
Oh, God. This is going to drive me down to wind. I was up
where here. You want to go?
Now I'm a pumping.
I'm going to take you back.
Gotta,
I've got to
get down
that
there.
You got to go where?
I've
got
to
me
down
there. But I was up here. Buck
go
Weaver
on,
used to be there. We had this store and next to where they're all melting.
Yeah.
Where that log cabin is.
Yeah.
And there's a couple old timers sitting there one night, an old Jack Sherman. Got really tight.
Yeah.
A good old egg, but and rough customer. But Jack was sitting there with these old timers, and there was some jerk there from, maybe he was from Michigan or Indiana, I don't know which. And of course they were always kidding me. I went in there about 9 o'clock, and he was out there, and he was blowing off. And Jack said something to me, and Giger said something to me, and I came back with some kind of remark. I couldn't remember what it was. So this guy from Michigan or Indiana says, "Well, you damn Yankee, why in the hell don't you go back where you came from?" Because we were just kidding, see? They rib me all the time. It's all right. I take it and come back at them if I can. If I can't, well, I just take it on the chin and go on. Because next and some other day, I'll get them, see? Just a game.
From Georgia. What are they? They're Georgia.
So he told me, he said, "Why in the hell don't you go back where you came from? You damn Yankee, why in the hell don't you come back, go back where you came from?" So, Jack says, "Mr. Bob." I said, "Yeah, Jack." He said, "Why don't you go back where you came from, you damn Yankee?" I said, "Jack, I will, as soon as I get the car fixed." He said, "By the way," he said, "you haven't been here very long, have you?" I said, "Nope." And this guy from Michigan says, "Hell no, he hadn't been here very long." He said, he didn't know what the score is. He said, "He don't even know whether the sun comes up or goes down," or something to that effect. I said, "Nope." Jack said, "By the way," he said, "Mr. Bobby," he said, "when did you first come to McCanopy?" I said, "Jack, as far as I can remember, 1921. That hadn't been very long ago." I said, "I'm still a damn Yankee," and I went and got me. This guy from Michigan just hooked at me. And the other ones. One of the other men says, "You see," he says, "he hadn't been here very long." I got in the car. From that day on, you know what they call me uptown? You damn Yankee.
Yeah. He can't live it down now, can he?
I can't.
Well, that's the end of that little tape. On the way to town, up to the end to use the telephone and just check in and see if Roberts was there and what he had to say. This is not the end. I think the numbering is off. It's way on over towards, looks around 775. But not that much tape left on the Dadburn thing. Thursday the 14th of August, 69. Thursday the 14th of August, 69. This is almost to the end of Channel 1 Right. I guess there's about 50 left.